St. Thomas Aquinas, Treatise on Grace. Question 109. Of the Necessity of Grace. Article 1. Without grace, man cannot know any truth. The act of the intellect, or of any created being whatsoever, depends upon God in two ways. First, inasmuch as it is from Him that it has the form whereby it acts. Secondly, inasmuch as it is moved by Him to act. The human understanding has a form, namely intelligible light, which of itself is sufficient for knowing certain intelligible things, namely those we can know through the senses. Higher intelligible things the human intellect cannot know, unless it be perfected by a stronger power, called the light of grace, inasmuch as it is added to nature. Hence we must say that for the knowledge of any truth whatsoever, man needs divine help, that the intellect may be moved by God to its act. But he does not need a new light added to his natural light in order to know the truth in all things, but only in some that surpass his natural knowledge. Article 2. Man can do some particular good without grace. Because human nature is not altogether corrupted by sin, so as to be shorn of every natural good, even in the state of corrupted nature it can, by virtue of its natural endowments, work some particular good, as to build dwellings, plant vineyards, and the like. Yet it cannot do all the good natural to it, so as to fall short in nothing. Just as a sick man can of himself make some movements, yet he cannot be perfectly moved with the movements of one in health, unless by the help of medicine he be cured. In the state of integrity, as regards the sufficiency of the operative power, man by his natural endowments could wish and do the good proportionate to his nature, such as the good of acquired virtue, but not surpassing good, as to the good of infused virtue. And thus, in the state of perfect nature, a man needs a gratuitous strength superadded to natural strength, in order to carry out works of supernatural virtue, which are meritorious. Article 3. By his own natural powers and without grace, man can love God above all things. This is because man, in a state of perfect nature, could by his natural power do the good natural to him without the addition of any gratuitous gift, though not without the help of God moving him. As Aristotle says, all things act according as they are naturally fit. And as Dionysius says, God leads everything to love of himself. But in the state of corrupt nature, man falls short of this in the appetite of his rational will, which, unless it is cured by God's grace, follows its private good on account of the corruption of nature. In the state of corrupt nature, man needs, even for this, the help of grace to heal his nature. Article 4. Man, even in his perfected nature, cannot fulfill all the divine commands out of charity. Although man can fulfill the substance of the acts commanded by the law without grace, when it comes to fulfilling them as regards the mode of acting, that is, their being done out of charity, neither in the state of perfect nature nor in the state of corrupt nature can man fulfill the commandments of the law without grace. Although Jerome says they are anathema who say God has laid impossibilities upon man, Aquinas responds, quote, "What we can do with the divine assistance is not altogether impossible to us. According to the philosopher, for Aristotle says, what we can do through our friends, we can do in some sense, by ourselves. Article 5. Man cannot merit everlasting life without grace. Everlasting life is an end exceeding the proportion of human nature. Hence man, by his natural endowments, cannot produce meritorious works proportionate to everlasting life. And for this, a higher force is needed, namely, the force of grace. Yet he can perform works conducing to a good which is natural to man, as to toil in the fields, to drink, to eat, or to have friends, and the like. As Augustine says, human nature, because it is nobler than other natural things, can be raised by the help of grace to a higher end. Article 6. Man cannot by himself prepare himself for grace without the external aid of grace. Christ said in John 6:4, "No man can come to me except the Father who has sent me draw him." But if man could prepare himself, he would not need to be drawn by another. Hence man cannot prepare himself without the help of grace. The preparation of the human will for good is twofold. The first, whereby it is prepared to operate rightly and enjoy God, and this preparation of the will cannot take place without the habitual gift of grace, which is the principle of meritorious works. There is a second way in which the human will may be taken to be prepared for the gift of habitual grace itself. Now, in order that man prepare himself to receive this gift, it is not necessary to presuppose any further habitual gift in the soul. Otherwise, we should go on to infinity. But we must presuppose a gratuitous gift of God, who moves the soul inwardly or inspires the good wish. For in these two ways do we need the divine assistance. Now, to prepare oneself for grace is, as it were, to be turned to God, just as whoever has his eyes turned away from the light of the sun prepares himself to receive the sun's light by turning his eyes toward the sun. Hence it is clear that man cannot prepare himself to receive the light of grace except by the gratuitous help of God moving him inwardly. Article 7. Man cannot rise from sin without the help of grace. The apostle says that if there had been a law given which could give life, then Christ died in vain. Therefore, by himself he cannot be justified. That is, he cannot return from a state of sin to a state of justice. Man by himself can nowise rise from sin without the help of grace. Now, to rise from sin is not the same as to cease from the act of sin. But to rise from sin means that man has restored to him what he has lost by sinning. Now, man incurs a triple loss by sinning: stain, corruption of natural good, and debt of punishment. It is manifest that none of these three can be restored except by God. Article 8. In the state of perfect nature, man could avoid sin, but not in the state of corruption. Now, to sin is nothing else than to stray from what is according to our nature, and in the state of perfect nature, man could avoid this. Nevertheless, he could not have done it without God's help to uphold him in good, since if this had been withdrawn, even his nature would have fallen back into nothingness. But in the state of corrupt nature, man needs grace to heal his nature in order that he may entirely abstain from sin. Now, it is not necessary that he should be always actually sinning, but he cannot be kept from mortal sin for long, since, as Gregory says, a sin not at once taken away by repentance, by its weight drags us down to other sins. Now, it is by the end that all human acts ought to be regulated, even as it is by the judgment of reason that the movements of the lower appetite should be regulated. When a man's heart is not so fixed on God, he breaks his commandments according to his preconceived end and his pre-existing habits, as the philosopher says. Although with premeditation of his reason a man may do something outside the order of his preconceived end and the inclination of his habit, but because a man cannot always have this premeditation, it cannot help occurring that he acts in accordance with his will turned aside from God, unless, by grace, he is quickly brought back to the due order. Article 9. Even after receiving the gift of grace, man still needs further help to do good and to avoid sin. Now, if this gift of grace be conceived of as being habitual, then man does not need a further help of grace, that is, a further infused habit. Yet even a man healed by grace remains corrupted and poisoned in the flesh, and there remains a darkness of ignorance in the mind, for which reason also it is becoming in those who have been born again as sons of God to say, "Lead us not into temptation," and "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven," and whatever else is contained in the Lord's Prayer pertaining to this. Article 10. Even after possessing grace, man needs the help of grace in order to persevere in abiding in the good. Now, if we mean by perseverance a habit of the mind whereby man stands steadfastly, lest he become depressed, or if we mean by perseverance a habit whereby a man has the purpose of persevering in good unto the end, then we should say that perseverance is infused together with grace, even as continence and the other virtues are. But if we mean by perseverance the abiding in good to the end of life, then man does not need another habitual grace for this. But he does need the divine assistance guiding and guarding him against the attacks of the passions, as appears from the preceding article. And hence, after anyone has been justified by grace, he still needs to beseech God for the aforesaid gift of perseverance, that he may be kept from evil till the end of his life. For to many grace is given to whom perseverance in grace is not given. Augustine says, "In the original state, man received a gift whereby he could persevere, but to persevere was not given him. But now, by the grace of Christ, many receive both the gift of grace whereby they may persevere and the further gift of persevering. And thus, Christ's gift is greater than Adam's fault. The restoration by Christ's grace, although it is already begun in the mind, is not yet completed in the flesh, as it will be in heaven, where man will not merely be able to persevere, but will be unable to sin."